Welcome to the INSS English podcast series, where you can listen to researchers discuss their findings and hear about research in progress. My name is Adi Kanto. I'm a research associate here at the INSS, focusing on Germany and German-Israeli-German-Jewish relations after 1945. Today, I'm happy to introduce you to a dear colleague from Berlin visiting Israel these days, and also our institute, Dr. Peter Lintel. Dr. Lintel is a researcher working at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, the SWP in Berlin, and his areas of expertise are Israel, Israeli domestic politics, state and religion, and Middle East conflict. He serves today as the head of the project Israel and its regional and global conflicts, domestic developments, security issues, and foreign affairs. Shalom, Peter. Welcome to our podcast. I'm very happy to have you here.
Shalom Adi, many thanks for having me.
So Peter and I will discuss today an issue close to us both, the German-Israeli relations, current state of affairs. This is an extremely big and important issue, which we will not, of course, be able to tackle in just 20 to 30 minutes, but we will definitely touch upon the main issues that are between the two countries, between the two peoples, and also in the individual level, of course. We'll start. And I would actually start by saying that, you know, year 2020, in just a few months from now, Israel and Germany will mark their 55th anniversary to the establishment of the German-Israeli diplomatic relations. According to your view, after 55 years of diplomatic relations, what is the current state of affairs between us?
Well, the current state of affairs, you know, I've been dealing with that question a lot over the last year. I've been in different discussion rounds. I've been speaking here, speaking with people in Israel and in Germany. And it seems to me that for Germans, this is really a topic. For Israelis, a bit less so. Being the exception, Adi, of course. So I think many Germans, German government and others, are seeing a growing gap between Germany and Israel, that Israel is drifting away a bit from, or is contributing to the growing gap between the states. It has to do with a lot of things, but certainly you could see the gap identified by German politicians. Starting with 2009, Israel becoming turning more to the right, especially now when you see there's a discussion going on about the annexation of the West Bank and stuff like that. This is really seen critical in Germany, I would say.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about our time, 2019. I'm asking myself, you know, maybe we will start also with a bit of a historical view, historical look. We're going back now 55 years to year 1965. What in your view were the expectations of both countries, of both peoples, expectations, and how have they, because I think they have also changed through the decades, through time, both from the Israeli side and also from the German side. They've changed, they have reformed, and I'm not sure they are at the moment meeting reality. So let's talk a bit about the beginning. Because we need to, if we want to understand what is happening between us today, we need to go back a bit in time. So what do you think were the expectations from the German side towards the Israeli state and the Israeli public?
Well, let me state with the two things. First of all, I think that German-Israeli relations have to be understood really within a framework of a set of universal values and particular values. The universal values, Germany tried to give itself after the rupture of the horrors of the Holocaust, were clinging to human rights, clinging to international law, Western integration, EU integration, never again war. You know, these values, the German never again is very different from the Israeli one. Never again perpetrator, never again, never alone, never again war, and stuff like that. So these were the universal, peaceful, so to say, values Germany has given itself. On the other hand, when you look at Israel, you have those very particular issue, the historical responsibility Germany, German officials certainly feel and express towards Israel. And within this framework, I'd say, of universal and particular, the whole history of relations must be seen. Sometimes it goes in this direction, sometimes it goes in another direction, but that's very important. But expectations, so to speak, one thing is, of course, what Germany gained and gains from Israel is of course, international recognition. You know, Israel is founded as a Jewish state, recognizing Germany as the state of the perpetrators or
the what we have to say, by the way, just to a bit of an interruption from my side, we have to refer to Germany as two Germanies. There were back then West Germany and East Germany. We're referring, of course, to West Germany at the moment, 1965.
So West Germany was, in any case, it had a lot to gain internationally by the recognition of Israel. Still, the historical responsibility played a role, like in the time.
How much do you think was West Germany reflecting the wishes of West Germans themselves? How much was there a correlation between the public and the state in that, in the matter of relations towards Israel after the Holocaust? How much was a correlation?
In the very beginning, it was really discussed also in politics. Mm-hmm. The Shilamin, the so-called reparations, were discussed. It was not a clear cut. It was the policy, or it was not a clear decision. It was the decision which Chancellor Adenauer really pushed through. And the same, surprisingly or not surprisingly, was in Israel, you know, right? So it was also discussed in Israel.
There was a very big public debate.
Yes. And so it mirrored, in a way, both societies. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's important that you said it was West and East Germany, the GDR, because the relations between West Germany and Israel were always a bit on hold during the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. because West Germany was afraid that the Arab states will recognize the GDR as a sovereign state. And that was a thing Germany wanted to prevent at any cost. Mm-hmm. So that strained a bit, or restrained West German-Israeli relations in mm-hmm. that sense.
I would also add, you know, when thinking back now 55 years, I would say that there were definitely diplomatic relations. I'm not that sure as how much the two peoples connected at that time. We cannot even compare. I mean, the cultural relations between our cultural and economic relations today are we cannot even compare to what it was 55 years ago. But I would say the first attempts by Israeli officials and also by West German officials to touch a little bit more and more, you know, officials landing in Israel in Ben Gurion Airport or from our side coming to West Germany. But it was more a very high level. I'm asking myself, how much did Israel and Germany connect in terms of people to people?
Probably very little, but by coincidence, my first professor, Thomas Philipp, who's dead now, unfortunately, he was one of the first Germans in the mid-60s to come to Israel, go to a kibbutz, work there, and he told me they had a vote. Can a kibbutz accept a German coming there? And it was mm-hmm. very close, but they accepted him in the end. So there were individuals who
because in the end, you know, when we talk about German-Israeli relations, we cannot avoid the fact that we're talking about an identity issue. Mm-hmm. It touches the very core of identity of many Israelis and the code of Israeli, the cultural code and historical code of who we are, of who the majority of many people in Israel are. Same goes also to Germans, to East Germans and to West Germans today. It's Israel as part of the German identity code. And Germany is part of Israel's identity code. That's why it's still called, by the way, special relations. Israel and Germany, special relations. And I'm asking, you know, it's a question. To what extent are the relations special today? Do you think they should be continued to be defined as special? What is special? Maybe only our history? Are we defined only by the history? Do we want the future to be shaped by what?
Well, for the foreseeable future, I have a hard time seeing that the relations will not be special anymore. And because this, I mean, the pillar, one of the central, maybe the central pillar or the central pillar is simply the Holocaust we both
sure.
refer to.
Is it possible? And maybe it's not even possible. We don't want to even aspire the gapping. It's ungappable.
I mean, German-Israeli relations is about that, right? Mm-hmm. How can we, after the horrors of the Holocaust, how can we find a way to talk to each other, to agree to each other? And I think there has a lot been done in the last years. Mm-hmm. But you're entirely, or in the last decades,
yes.
but you're entirely right when you say it's a matter of identity. Because both sides are intrinsically linked to their pasts. So when we look at each other, it's always a look at ourselves. It has to do with a mirror, basically.
I fully agree.
And when you compare it with other states, it is not an issue of material interests or something like that. Mm-hmm. German-Israel relations are really, first and foremost, a matter of identity issues.
And let me just continue now your last sentence. And I want to refer now to the younger generations. The younger generations in Germany and in Israel. And to talk about perceptions. What do you think? What do young Germans today, when they think about Israel or when they meet Israelis, what do they see? And the same goes, by the way, to us. Younger Israelis today, when they look at Germany, when they hear about German news, when they meet Germans, what do they see?
Well,
if you talk about the mirroring, and I fully agree with this term, it resonates something that touches the very core of our identity, of our past, of our family past, and I will reach also the scope of the family being in a way a microcosmos of society, both in both countries. Because stories that are told or not told in the family and the way they are passed, the narratives that are passed through the generations, shape our identity. That's when we come to the world, we are socialized by them, and then we meet the other. And how does it affect the way we look at each other?
Let's start with identities, I'd say. If you look at the surveys, to the extent I know, of course, young Germans, as well as young Israelis, get a bit more detached from the Holocaust. I mean, probably that's...
I'm asking myself, to what extent is it really the case?
I just know the surveys. That's all I can say. Mm. And in a way, it's natural. I've been talking to museums at former concentration camps, how they tackle this issue, and they actually develop programs together with Israeli colleagues here, but they say we cannot but take the time which has passed into account. For the third generation, it is different than for the first and the second generation, so they need to think about new concepts, how to deal with that the history has passed and stuff like that. So there is work done. Where it leads, we have to see, right? Let me say one thing about encountering Jews and Israelis and the German perception of Israel, or the Israeli perception of Germany, before I ask you what's your take on it. I was sitting, personal note, I was sitting at the Tel Aviv beach in 2008 watching the football quarterfinals, whatever. And Germany was in the round of the last eight. And there was a big survey in Yediot Ahronot whom the Israelis would support. And after that, surprise, not a majority, but a plurality of Israelis supported Germany. And I remember this discussion. What's going on? How can we support Germany? So this is a certain sign of change, certainly,
yes,
within the generations. Mm-hmm. But Adi, please, you tell me, how do the Israelis, you lived in Germany, you're an Israeli, how do the Israelis confront Germans? How do they see it?
So I would, this might be a good opportunity to scratch a bit the surface and to talk about the underwater streams. Because I, as a researcher, I'm dealing a lot with trauma and intergenerational context in the family in Germany. And I research the grandchildren generation. And I have my own, of course, impression of being a third generation myself and growing up in the Israeli society. So I think there is a gap. I think there is a dissonance, and a very big one, between what is projected outside and what is inside. This goes to both sides, by the way, in Germany and in Israel. The trauma is very much present. We feel it on a daily basis, definitely in Israel. I know that when we come to talking about what's happening outside of Israel, the situation is a bit different, the discourse is different. We're talking about Israelis who, many of them, come from Holocaust survivor families. And even if they're not coming from Holocaust survivor families, they have grown up here. This means that they were affected by the discourse, the Israeli discourse. And the Holocaust serves as a very, very important, imminent narrative that we were all shaped upon. and by. What happens when we go to Germany? What happens when we meet Germans? And what happens when Germans come and meet us? And I think it's inevitable that this comes to the surface. The question is, I'm asking myself, how much authentic it really is? How the question of authenticity, how authentic are we with ourselves? There is a clash sometimes of narratives, and I want to refer now to the German discourse. To my knowledge, and I've been researching this for the past 15 years, there is a clash of narratives in the German family. And this, why I say that is because it has an immediate implication to the relations between Israelis and Germans afterwards. There is a narrative of victimhood in Germany. There's always been a narrative of victimhood in Germany. And by saying the narrative of victimhood, I mean that there are many Germans who today, but also in the past decades, have told different stories about what happened in their families or what happened to their... Or they came to grow a certain distance from the past. They know, you know, many researchers talk about the cognitive knowledge. There's a cognitive historical knowledge of what had happened. But on the personal, emotional knowledge, this is where the gap is. I have nothing to do with that. Many people say in Germany, I have nothing to do. It's not in my family. It wasn't my grandfather. It was someone else's grandfather. Now, what happens in the situations when millions of people say that? And I'm not referring only to the first generation 70 years ago. I'm referring to third, yes, and also fourth generation of young Germans today, who I've personally met in my work in political education, in museums, in former concentration camps in Germany, where I really felt that gap, that dissonance between historical knowledge. They know the facts. No one says that Auschwitz never happened. But when it comes to their personal, emotional relation to that story, in the family level, of what my grandfather did, or grandmother, on how he collaborated, or
great-grandfather
in that case, right? So this is there's a dissonance here. There's a disattachment. A lot of them feel disattached from that. That has nothing to do with me. This is 80 years ago. What do you want from me? Now, what happens when they meet Israelis? What happens when they come across, not all of them, by the way, come across Jews, because there are not many Jews in Germany left living today there. It's a very, very small community in comparison to what it used to be. They are confronted with sometimes a new narrative, or definitely there's a kind of confrontation. Now, what happens from the Israeli side? What happens from the Jewish side? Definitely expectations that are not met. What is happening is that they can relate to, they can have very good business relations or economic relations or cultural relations, but when it comes to the emotional contact, there's a clash here.
Adi, I mean, to what extent do you think that... percentage-wise or so, like the discourse of victimhood is in Germany really present? Like how many parts of the society? Because it doesn't seem that this is very marginal. It became a bit bigger in the last years, but in the public sphere, I don't think that the German public portrays itself as victims rather than as perpetrators. So I know what you're saying.
It becomes more and more, according to the research that I'm dealing with, it becomes more and more mainstream. I mean, it always was there in the margins. Right, by the way, right after 1945, secondary anti-Semitism was there. But now the main difference from 1945 till today, I think, and now we come to the next, and we will also conclude with that. What used to be in the margins of society, the rewriting of history, putting uncomfortable memories aside and telling a new narrative about grandfather, telling a new narrative about grandmother that actually has nothing to do with reality, this becomes more and more mainstream. And this, I think, has a lot to do with the rise of anti-Semitism today. We talk about Germany today, but of course, this is a phenomenon that we can see in the European level. But today, we're talking about Germany. Yes, there is anti-Semitism, of course, also from extreme left and extreme Islam or the from that side, but we cannot avoid the fact that there is a growing anti-Semitism from the right wing. And when we look at the biographies of the people who project this kind of prejudice towards Jews, we check their biographies. In most cases, we will find very good connections with the first generation, with the war generation, stories that have been told or rewritten or redefined. And I would say also a lot of lies and a lot of lies that have been passed through the generations that shape a whole generation today.
I'm literate in anti-Semitic theories or in theories of anti-Semitism. I'm not an expert in trauma transmission. So let me just say that. There's a lot of discussion going on, not only in Germany, worldwide, about the rise of anti-Semitism in Germany. So there was, if you look at the surveys, there was always an amount of 15 to 20% of people with anti-Semitic stereotypes, prejudices, to varying degrees, certainly, but that was always there. But this was indeed not in the public, because it was hardly acceptable in Germany, and it is still a huge problem, to be fair, to be when you're in public to say something anti-Semitic or to be charged with anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. It changed a bit in the last years with the it had to do to a certain extent with the whole discussion about the migrants, with the refugees coming in, because on the one hand you have strengthening of the right wing and the more popular right wing who dares to speak out.
They are saying things that they have not been able to say 20 years ago in public. Why? How is that?
It has to do with that. Here comes the victimhood idea in.
Yes.
But it's related to the migrants. They say there is a big plot it depends also to whom you speak. Not everyone is like a conspiracy theorist.
Sure.
But they say that the 2 to 3 million migrants pose a threat for the German culture, and that we need to... So here comes the victimhood idea. At the same time, of course, do these migrants come from states where anti-Semitic stereotypes and prejudices are to be found on a very high level? Mm-hmm. So this brings on in a new discussion. Mm-hmm. But actually the numbers, if you look at the numbers, they are not much, much higher. In 2018, they have written of 20%. Okay, that's a very high now. But it's more like people dare to say things on the streets which they didn't do before. And this is a problem which needs to be tackled.
Definitely. One question before we finish. The connection between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, how do you see that? How do you see the relations between the two?
It's an ongoing discussion in Germany, because we see an overlap, let's say a conflictization of the discussion of anti-Semitism, because the relation between the two is discussed and not entirely clear. There are some who say anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism is the same. Others say it's something very different. But what we see is an absolutization of positions, so to speak, that, the conflict...
Extremism.
And the conflict comes in.
Yes.
The Israeli-Palestinian conflict comes in with that discussion.
And I'm asking myself, is it really related? Is it really related to the conflict, or maybe it's related to old prejudice against Jews?
True. It can be that. There are some data on that. Let's not go.
Maybe it's a camouflage of an old hatred.
According to one study I know, one third of Israel critique is anti-Semitically motivated. Two thirds are not.
Okay.
So that's one study I know. Mm-hmm. Others will challenge this study. It's just the one I know, right? But the point is, the German society is not equipped for this discussion.
Okay.
Because, as said, when you're charged with anti-Semitism, this is, especially for politicians, that's the worst thing someone can tell you. And if it's in the media, then you're basically
out of discussion.
Out of politics. Mm-hmm. But we see really... a situation where different groups, pro-Israeli, pro-Palestinian groups, try to portray themselves portray their interests as absolute rights. You know, we're both sides say we're the victims, we have the right to the land, the other one is illegitimate. So you see a delegitimization going on in both sides. And this has now reached the discussion of anti-Zionism and anti-Zionism. There were a lot of discussions going on in Germany in this respect. There was the BDS declaration, there was incident with the Jewish Museum and so on and so on.
And what, also Germany, had, we have to say it, adopted the definition of anti-Semitism. This is something that it's worthwhile saying.
Adopted it, exactly, which has 11 of its points, 7 of the 11 points which are given to the definition deal with Israel. So you already see the conflict, how the conflict influenced. Mm-hmm. What I'm afraid of, maybe to say that, is that... First, as I said, that the German society is not well equipped for this discussion. And secondly, is that we see what can be termed loss of the ability to have ambiguity, in the sense that on the one hand, I can support Israel as a state. On the other hand, I understand the Palestinian demands for a known state. And the discussion is, much as it is already in the US, is getting so heated now that this position is getting lost. So you have to take positions in one side. And this, I think this will be a major problem for the German society in the upcoming years.
You know, maybe as a concluding sentence, I think we tried in the past 30 minutes to touch upon core issues that stand, you know, that lie in between the two, between Israel and Germany today and also in the past decades. Like you, I am also very worried. I see the drifting apart, the process of drifting apart between Germany and Israel. I'm asking myself, how much were we really close? How can we drift apart from one another if we were not that close from the beginning? So maybe it's about time to talk about the truth between us and to have more authentic. I wish, you know, if as a researcher working on Germany, and I wish for a more authentic discussion between Israelis and Germans, not to be afraid and to talk about the lack of trust, because I think there is a lack of trust here, and I'm worried about that. What I think we try to do, and I think we definitely succeeded, is definitely to have an authentic talk, and it's a small step in a much bigger journey, a larger journey I think that is headed for Israel and Germany and for Israelis and Germans, and also in their relations with themselves. You know, when I go back to the identity point, when we meet Germans, we meet ourselves. We meet parts of our identity. And when Germans meet Israelis or Jews, they meet themselves. And it's sometimes very hard because it resonates the past and the crimes that were committed. But it maybe also gives taste of what can be better. And it has a lot to do with political education, I think. You said that you are worried. I'm worried as well. Political education, to give the tools. You said that the German public, or maybe also the Israeli public, is not well equipped in dealing with what needs to be dealt with. So if we are talking about tools, then I think political education is giving the information to the people and talking about facts and not about fake news and not about illusionary facts. This would be a good step. And I think we started it today. Last point from you, from your side?
Let me just say thank you for being here, for the ability to be here, and thank you, Adi.
Thank you very, very much, Dr. Peter Linto, for this fascinating talk. This concludes our podcast conversation for today. You're welcome to listen to all our podcasts by going to the INSS website at www.inss.org.il, where you'll find a featured section for our podcasts. You're also invited to sign up for our newsletter and receive alerts for the Institute's various research programs. Thank you very much for listening, and take care.